You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
29 people still missing from the Costa Concordia, the ship that crashed Friday. It actually ran aground and fell over off Italy's west coast, including a couple among the missing from Minnesota. Six people have been confirmed dead from the accident. It's the worst cruise accident in almost a century. The ship's owners have blamed the captain for Friday's crash, saying he improperly changed course. The disaster has powerful implications for the global cruise industry. It's a human tragedy still unfolding, and now there's the threat of an environmental catastrophe. The ship is stranded, full of fuel, near the environmentally sensitive island of Giglio. Three voices now on this terrifying story of the Costa Concordia. We begin with the environmental angle, and we're joined by Grazia Francescato, who's a member of the Italian Ecology and Freedom Party. She's joining us from near Rome. Ms. Francescato, what is the environmental threat, and what efforts are being taken to protect these sensitive areas?
Of course, the first concern is human safety. We are worried and sorry for the victims, but there is also a threat, a very nightmare for the environment, because this is a very delicate, very fragile ecosystem. We are close to a national park, and actually we are in a national park, which is both on land and on the sea, and therefore the 2,200 tons of fuel which are inside the skull of the ship are a big threat, because if they spill out, they will destroy this very important natural environment. So what they're trying to do, they have ships which are technologically equipped to siphon out the fuel, but of course that is an operation that has to be done in a hurry, because the ship might slide down and might, you know, go down in the depth of the sea, and that would be a terrible ecological disaster. The second thing that we have to do, and the Minister for the Environment said we are going to do it immediately, is to enforce more cautious routes. I mean, the ships, these gigantic ships, which are like floating cities, pass too close to the coast in order to let tourists enjoy the coastline, which is absolutely crazy. You know, we have to have stricter laws and to enforce them.
And, Madam Francescato, are you worried about the cruise industry itself, the enforcement that's going to have to be taken here?
Absolutely, yes. We have been raising this kind of alarm several times, especially, for instance, in the lagoon in front of Venice. Big ships like that should not be allowed to enter important ecosystems like Lagoon of Venice or like the national parks and marine parks areas. And there is another problem which is we rarely talk about, because it's an ordinary problem, which is waste. They produce a lot of waste, these ships, and generally they don't dispose of the waste in an adequate way, so they throw it into the sea, and we have this kind of ordinary tragedy every day. Of course, this one is an extraordinary tragedy, and we're all very worried about the possibility that the oil might spill into the sea, causing a terrifying disaster.
Among the questions raised by the disaster of the Costa Concordia, that's the ship that fell over and crashed Friday off of Italy's west coast. Watching it, among other lawmakers in Italy, is Grazia Francescato. She's a member of the Italian Ecology and Freedom Party. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next up is Ian Donoff, a survivor from the Costa Concordia. He joins us on the line from London. Ian, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So what happened? Just tell us the story of when you realized this ship was out of control.
I and my wife were eating, actually, in a slightly upmarket restaurant on the boat. And next to the table, actually, happens to be the captain. You know, that's always you've got to eat sometime. We left about 9:15. The restaurant, and went down to the top of the auditorium, where there was going to be a magician doing illusion acts, which he started at 9:30. At 9:45, I heard a scrape. Something went wrong with the lights. He was on the stage and then vanished, and that wasn't part of his magic trick. He had seen something together with other people in that lower part of the auditorium, and started rushing out. Now, other people were, in fact, coming down the stairs, but they wasn't in a panic. It was like knowing, you know, what was actually happening. The cap captain, well, somebody on behalf of the captain, announced to say Commodore, I think they call them, announces that it's a generator problem and we'll sort it out shortly. There's no need to panic. Well, then the ship started listing, and it started listing badly. First one way and then the other. We went back to our cabin, our stateroom, and then my new wife, and it was our honeymoon. We were married just 11 days, and she said, why don't we take our passports, a warm jumper, an outside jacket for whatever it is when we have to go to this muster station. That's an outside deck which has the lifeboats on it. It's going to be cold, even if nothing else happens. But as we were going there, the ship started listing more. And we thought, this is no ordinary thing. We got to the muster stations, and I'm afraid it was a bit chaotic because they didn't have an idea. Number one, we didn't know which lifeboat to go on. Number two, nobody said load the lifeboat. And there wasn't yet a call to abandon ship, which actually did come, and they opened the lifeboat areas for us to go out. But meanwhile, the ship was listing so badly, and we were on the area that's raised high, not the bit that's into the sea. And, of course, the lifeboats couldn't get down because there was no gravity. It was hitting the side all the time. So they, in fact, stopped that and got us out gingerly. From then on, of course, the ones that were involved with this evacuation onto lifeboats, and that was their training. I mean, by day, they're sort of chefs, waiters, cabin staff. They didn't know what to do.
Oh, my goodness.
There was no tannoy system because the electrics had failed and there was complete darkness.
Ian, hold on.
Some of the emergency lights went.
Ian, hold on for a second. First of all, your wife is okay, right?
Yes, we're a bit bruised and a bit battered, but we're okay.
All right, we're talking with Ian Donoff, who's a survivor from the Costa Concordia. Also with us here in the studio is Ted Skull, contributing editor for Cruise Travel Magazine, has spent 5 years at sea on about 200 different passenger ships. I want to go back to Ian, but have you heard anything like this, this sense of going to the music show, seeing the captain sitting next to you at dinner, and then all of a sudden the ship's on its side?
No, that's very, very unusual.
And, I mean, did he do everything right, Ian, going to the muster station, grabbing your passports?
Yes, he's married to a good woman. She said what they had to do was to go back to the cabin and dress warmly and be prepared to leave the ship.
Ian Donoff, did you ever fear for your life?
We were on the last 100 that got off the boat. Now, they're saying in the press in the UK that there's a conversation from the Coast Guard to the captain, which comes out to say that why are you on a lifeboat? You should get back and help all the other people off. Because the lifeboats, I think, the ones that were on the side that's more towards the sea, the ones that got away hours before hundreds of us were on the back of the boat, and it was the Coast Guard that threw up a rope ladder to get us up about five stories height on the external hull for us to gingerly climb down on our backside, then twist round, and then drop into their Coast Guard boat that was bobbing up and down below.
Unbelievable.
Now, some people, you know, hundreds of people getting down this way, doing it very gingerly, very slowly. Some are older, some are younger. Most people in panic, not much lighting. The rest clinging, I say clinging, it's a certain angle, I suppose 70 degrees or whatever it might be, angle on the external hull, with absolute hell trying to get up from a very slopey deck, a very sloping deck through, in fact, some sort of access point to get onto the hull. I mean, these access decks were painted with a nice, shiny, slippery paint. I mean, it might look nice in the day, but it was an ice rink to get up
Oh my goodness.
And to walk along. And we were walking along what was the internal wall, which of course had windows to the dining room, etc.
Sure, you are on your way to being upside down. Ian Donoff, we are glad that you're okay. I hesitate to call this an adventure, a terrifying adventure. He's relating his story from London in the UK. We're going to just finish up the hour here with Ted Skull, contributing editor for Cruise Travel Magazine, in the short time that we have. This is the worst possible commercial for the cruise industry.
Yes.
If the captain escaped that ship before the crew was evacuated, that's a crime?
Well, he's supposed to stay with his ship. He's in command of his ship. He's supposed to stay with his ship until all the passengers and crew are off.
And what about taking matters into your own hand and sort of cruising into a sensitive environmental area just to show the passengers some part of the coastline? Is that even precedent?
Well, yes. Occasionally, a captain will take passengers closer than the normal track, but usually this kind of accident doesn't happen.
So many questions about the Costa Concordia. Of course, 29 people still missing. That's Ted Skull, contributing editor for Cruise Travel Magazine. We also spoke with survivor Ian Donoff and a member of the Italian Parliament on the environmental implications. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
You can respond to that or any other story that you've heard at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.